brought to you by Penguin.
The Roses of No Man's Land by Lynn MacDonald. Read by Alison Dowling. This book is dedicated to the nurses, the doctors, and the soldiers whose stories it tells, to the tens of thousands whose stories will never be told, and, in salute, to the generation to which they all belonged. Author's Foreword. I am not good at titles. The titles of my books tend to be baldly descriptive rather than imaginative. Somme, 1914, 1915, Passchendaele. But the title of this book arrived ready-made. So much of a chicken-and-egg situation that I'm not sure which came first. I was working for the BBC on a radio documentary on an aspect of the First World War and, looking for some suitable music, had called up from the archive a selection of ancient tapes made from early recordings. Some were only a minute long, some were double-sided, some were double-tracked, and the floor was covered with tiny reels holding scraps of tape when we heard it. It was sung in a cracked tenor voice in a crackling recording, but the words were perfectly audible. It's the one red rose the soldier knows. It's the work of a master hand. In the war's great curse stands the Red Cross nurse. She's the rose of No Man's Land. And that was it. What a title. But this is not a woman's book. It is simply a different aspect of the experience of war. A war that was waged behind the battlefront by another army of doctors, nurses, orderlies, ambulance drivers and stretcher bearers, the vast majority of them volunteers, who were just as much on active service as the soldiers in their care. Anyone who doubts this need only visit the vast military cemetery on the road that runs along the coast between Boulogne and Etaples, where the vast tented hospitals were set up. Each gravestone in the long first row commemorates a doctor, a nurse, a VAD, or an orderly who was killed in an air raid or who died of disease or infection. And throughout the cemetery, there are many more. But despite the fact that I have occasionally found it irksome when people have referred to your book on nurses, there is no getting away from the fact that if the ghost that haunts Ypres and Arras is the glum British Tommy slogging along with rifle and pack, then the ghost of Boulogne, Etaples, and Rouen ought to be a girl. She's probably called Elsie or Gladys or Dorothy. Her ankles are swollen, her feet are aching, her hands reddened and rough. She has little money, no vote, and has almost forgotten what it feels like to be really warm. She sleeps in a tent. Unless she has told a diplomatic lie about her age, she is 23. She is the daughter of a clergyman, a lawyer, or a prosperous businessman, and has been privately educated and groomed to be a lady. She wears the unbecoming outdoor uniform of a VAD or an army nurse. She is as much a part of the war as Tommy Atkins. In the course of over 2 years' research and preparation for this book, I spent hundreds of hours talking to octogenarians who were nurses, soldiers, orderlies, and doctors. What comes through most strongly is their remarkable resilience, the casualness with which they refer to work in circumstances and situations which would appall most other people, the matter-of-fact way in which they refer to their war wounds. Oh dear, I'm sorry to be so clumsy. It's these stupid stiff fingers of mine. It was an apology I heard literally scores of times as a photograph slipped to the floor, or two drops of tea slopped into a saucer. The stupid stiff fingers are mostly scarred where they were lanced to release the
Sample complete. Ready to continue?